HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to Mint. I am Nasreen Sultana. I am an assistant editor at Mint. I keep a close track of all that is happening in the world of stock markets. You are listening to All Things Markets, where I speak to experts analyzing the big trends moving the stock markets.
Market regulator SEBI has asked mutual fund houses to restrict the exposure to additional Tier 1 and Tier 2 bonds. This directive comes after write-offs in such bonds issued by two banks in the past year had hit investors. The Department of Financial Services had written to SEBI to withdraw the guidelines related to the change in valuation norms, while industry body AMFI had said it is in discussion with SEBI to further smoothen the process of implementation of the directive. So what exactly are these AT1 or perpetual bonds? Why are they risky? And why are there conflicting views about such bonds? To understand everything about the SEBI new norm and possible consequences, I'm in conversation with Piyush Gupta, Director, Crisil Funds Research. Hi Piyush, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Naseem. Glad to be here. Thank you so much.
So, Piyush, there are a lot of conversation in the market. There's a lot of stories written about the SEBI's new order about on the AT1 bonds, also called as perpetual bonds. If you can take us through what exactly are these AT1 bonds and also the 82 category of bonds.
Right. So, Basel III Tier 1 bonds or AT1 bonds and Basel III Tier 2 bonds, these are the two category of bonds which have been covered in the recent SEBI circular. Now, if you look at additional Tier 1 bond or AT1 bonds, these are perpetual bonds which are issued by banks. By perpetual, I mean these are bonds which doesn't have any maturity date, unlike any conventional bond which has a fixed maturity. Plus, these are the bonds which have certain features which are different from your conventional bonds. For example, in case of AT1 bonds, the bank or issuer has a full discretion of non-payment of coupon during the term of the bond. And this is typically applicable at a time when the financially banks are going through a difficult phase, and at that time they may choose not to pay coupon under these bonds. Second is these bonds also have provide option to the issuer to completely write off the principal or convert it into equity under specific scenarios. For instance, if the bank reaches a point of PONV or point of non-viability situation, or if the core equity of the bank falls below a predefined level, under such situation, the principal of the AT1 bonds can be completely written off, or they can be converted into equity. Given that you have such features in AT1 bonds, they are relatively more risky compared to the conventional bonds, which are otherwise there in a debt mutual funds.
Right, Piyush. This norms itself sounds so risky for anybody investing into it, but I'm sure the returns are also good. So what exactly is the SEBI's new circular? It definitely talks about protecting the retail investors mostly. So could you take us through what exactly is the SEBI circular saying?
Right. So SEBI circular, which came in the last 1 week, basically looks at two components. One, it talks about the exposure limit to these AT1 bonds and Basel III Tier 2 bonds. Second is, they cover the valuation of perpetual bonds. Essentially, AT1 bonds are a perpetual bond that we spoke about earlier. So these are the two parts which are covered in the SEBI circular. If we look at the first part, which is the exposure limit, there SEBI has put out a condition whereby the mutual fund cannot have more than 10% exposure to such instrument, which is Basel III Tier 1 and Tier 2 bonds, issued by a single issuer across all the schemes that the mutual fund is managing. So that is the first condition that they have to comply with. The second condition is at a scheme level, whereby a debt portfolio cannot have more than 10% exposure to such instruments, again, Basel III Tier 1 and Tier 2 bonds. The third condition is at an issuer level, whereby exposure to such instruments cannot be more than 5% by a single issuer in a debt portfolio. So these are the three conditions that will need to be followed by debt mutual funds going forward while they take exposure to these instruments. The other aspect that they have covered is any such fund which has exposure to such bonds or has a provision to invest into such bonds, they will need to have a provision for segregated portfolio. With respect to the second part, which is a valuation of perpetual bonds, there the circular talks about defining a maturity of 100 years for all the perpetual bonds which are part of a debt portfolio while valuing or pricing these bonds in the underlying portfolio. So these are the conditions that they have covered in their recent circular.
Right, Piyush, thanks for that good explanation. But the 100-year maturity means that we are kind of considering that the 81 bonds issued by the mutual fund will expire in 100 years, right?
So not really. When you look at 81 bonds, whenever they are issued with a call option. Generally, you will find that most of the 81 bonds, they have been issued with a call option of 5 years. But that option is something which is there with the bank. There could be a situation whereby they may not exercise that option, or there are times when they may exercise the option. Given that this option is there with the bank, regulator has prescribed a maturity of 100 years, but it doesn't definitely mean that these bonds are going to mature in 100 years. They can mature even earlier, depending on when the bank exercises the call option.
Right. So given the classification of the bond itself is so risky, you have been dealing with this such kind of schemes and bonds and analyzing the impact. What has been your analysis? What kind of investors do invest in 81 or A2 bonds, and are the returns good or beat the traditional bonds?
So these are the like we discussed earlier, these instruments are definitely more riskier compared to the conventional bonds. One, of course, because there is an optionality which is built in terms of issuer calling back that bond, or maybe there's an option with respect to payment of coupon or conversion into equity, or maybe completely writing off the principal. So definitely these bonds are relatively more riskier compared to conventional bonds. But with that additional risk, there is also the additional coupon that is available with these instruments. Typically, you'll find 200 to 300 basis point higher coupon being offered on these bonds compared to the conventional bond being offered by the same bank.
All right. So, Piyush, according to you, what made the market regulator SEBI to come out with this strict norm for 81, 82 bonds? Do you have any reasoning behind that?
So I think what we have seen is the regulator has been very proactive, especially in the last 2-3 years, with respect to monitoring the and mitigating the risk in the underlying portfolio of debt mutual funds. And this is what is evident here, even in this situation, whereby they have put restriction in terms of exposure limit to these instruments, which in a way reduces the overall, or at least puts a cap on the overall risk that can be there in such portfolios which are having exposure to such instruments.
Okay, so it's basically safeguarding the interest of the investors who have exposure to 81 or 82 bonds. So you have done some kind of analysis based on the February data, because this circular came in March. And of course, all the AMCs have time to kind of reduce their exposure if they don't meet the circular norm. What does your reading in February show as per the AMC level and also the scheme levels?
Yeah, so rightly you mentioned this circular is applicable from 1st April, and it is applicable for the new investments that the fund can make going forward. For all the existing investments which are there in the portfolio, mutual fund scheme is not required to redeem and rebalance their portfolio to make it compliant with the condition that have been laid out in the circular. However, when we overlay the conditions on the FEB end portfolio, what we find is the first condition that we spoke about, which is 10% limit at a overall mutual fund level, is something that is not crossed by any mutual fund which is managing portfolio at based on February and portfolio data. The second condition, which is at a scheme level, whereby a 10% limit has been applied for such instruments in a debt portfolio. There we find there are some 36 schemes which have exposure to these, which have exposure more than 10% to such instruments. And these 36 schemes are across 13 categories, and whereby banking and PSU is one category where the exposure is, where there are highest number of schemes which have exposure more than 10% of their total debt portfolio. Following banking and PSU, you have credit risk funds, which have 5 such funds which do not meet the SEBI condition. And then you have medium duration and medium to long duration funds, where you have 4 such schemes which have exposure more than 10% of such instruments.
Yeah, this definitely is a positive move for the retail investor. And of course, it safeguards his or her returns getting completely washed off. But do you think, since you said that banking and PSU funds have high exposure, at least in February data that shows, do you think this kind of limits the fundraising options by banks?
Mutual funds are definitely one of the large investors into such instruments. So to that extent, the appetite for such instruments will be lower going forward, given that these exposure limits have been put in place. So to that extent, the demand for such instruments by the mutual funds for their portfolios will have an adverse impact as we move ahead.
All right. But anything on the fundraising aspects? Because these bonds are instruments for the company or the banks to raise money. You think this is also limiting the fundraising vehicle?
So one, of course, is you have mutual funds which invest into such instruments, but you have other asset managers like insurance companies and retirement funds or provident funds who may invest into such instruments. So to that extent, I think it should not be a challenge from the fundraising perspective. Again, what we see here is when we look at the overall analysis based on February end data, you have only 36 funds which have exposure more than 10% or the limit that has been prescribed by the regulator. If you look at the overall, you have about 2,000 odd schemes which are currently active. So to that extent, it's a small portion of overall universe of mutual fund schemes which have invested beyond the threshold limits. There are many other schemes who can still take exposure to such instruments anyhow.
All right. Thanks a lot, Piyush, for those details and explaining us what exactly are 81 bonds and how much risky the portfolio gets if you have higher exposure and what the SEBI circular means. Thanks a lot for the explanation and thanks for giving your time.
Thank you so much for having me here. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. For feedback, you can write to me at nasreen.s@lifemint.com or you can reach out to me on Twitter at @nasreenstory. You can also reach out to us at HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And to listen to more podcasts like this, you need to log on to www.htsmartcast.com.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast. HT Smartcast.